Jennifer Gogenbach, and I represent DemTUF on this appeal. There are three primary issues that I would like this court to review de novo with respect to this case. The first issue is whether the Industrial Claims Appeals Office applied the correct legal test in determining whether the workers in this case were independent contractors or employees. The second issue is whether the substantial evidence in the record supports the Industrial Claims Appeals Office's findings that the workers at issue were controlled and directed by DemTUF and that they were not engaged in an independent trade or business. The third issue that I would like to discuss with you today is whether the Employment Security Act as a whole authorizes the division to impose tax liability on entire classes of workers using one representative and making findings based upon that single representative worker. It's DemTUF's position in its briefs and here today that the answer to all of those issues and those questions is no. With respect to the first issue that I raised, the correct legal test to be applied in finding whether a worker is an independent contractor or an employee. Here, the panel looked at the single dispositive factor test that was rejected by the Colorado Supreme Court in two cases earlier this year, Soft Rock Geological and Western Innovations.
If we were to agree with your first point, why wouldn't the appropriate course be a remand for the panel to take the case back up and issue a new opinion based on the intervening authority without even getting to your second and third issues?
If the court would like to issue a remand, we understand that. We would argue that this court has the ability to do de novo review of the evidence to determine whether or not substantial evidence in the record would support a finding that the workers, in fact, here were independent contractors. And so we are asking this court to reverse the decision of the panel.
Ms. Gogenbach, can I return you to your point that I think you said that the panel here relied on this single dispositive factor analysis? What do you point to in the panel's decision to support your argument there?
On page 3 of the panel's decision, the quote is that in order to determine whether a worker is engaged in an independent business related to the services performed, a putative employer must show that the worker is engaged in a separate business venture other than the provision of services for the putative employer. That was the legal analysis done by the panel, and because the panel found that the evidence in the record did not support similar services being provided for others simultaneously, that therefore there was no independent trade met here.
But I thought the panel recognized that there was simultaneous services being provided to other companies. The panel said here the evidence shows that the employees or the workers worked for other employers, but this showed only that they maintained two different part-time jobs simultaneously. So did the panel recognize they actually worked simultaneously for different people?
They recognized it, but they distinguished it, and they said if the services are covered employment, then that's not the same as being engaged in an independent trade.
Okay.
And so they basically rejected all of the evidence that related to other services being performed because they found those other services to be covered employment.
Okay.
Here, the correct legal test requires the review of the totality of the circumstances, not just one factor, whether or not services were provided for others simultaneously. Here, this court could look at the 9 factors that are set forth in the relevant statute, which is CRS 870.115. Those 9 factors are a guidepost, and many of those factors are met here. Dunn Tough did not require any exclusivity with respect to any of the groomers. Dunn Tough did not establish any quality standards for the groomers. In fact, the groomers are independently licensed by the state of Colorado Department of Agriculture, and they're required to maintain those licenses on an annual basis at a cost of $320 a year. That's not reimbursed by Dunn Tough. That is solely borne by the groomer themselves. The quality standards are merely imposed by the state and the state standards, but Dunn Tough imposed no quality standards. They paid on a commission basis, on a percentage basis, and payment here was solely related to whether or not the services were accomplished, which we believe is compelling. The groomers were not paid simply for showing up. The groomers were paid based upon services completed. So if you had a worker who was performing grooming services and the customer was unhappy and didn't wish to pay for those services, that groomer then would not receive payment. And we believe this is a compelling argument or a compelling factor to show that there was an independent trade element that was met here. In terms of terminating the work during the contract period, there was an independent contractor agreement in place here, and the evidence in the record and at the hearing was that no worker was ever terminated during the contract period unless there was some sort of egregious injury to an animal or some sort of egregious issue that would be more of a licensure issue. Another factor for this court's consideration is what tools were provided by the groomer. In this case, the groomers provided all of their own tools and materials to perform their services. We're talking scissors, shears, electronic nail clippers, brushes, combs, and the like. Those were all tools and materials that belonged to the groomer, that the groomer made a financial investment in, and that would go with the groomer from place to place wherever they would perform those services. The next factor in the statute is whether or not Dunn Tough dictated the time of performance. The substantial evidence in the record here shows that there was no hours that were required by any groomers to work. In fact, the groomers chose what days and what hours they wanted to work by coming into the facility and writing their name on an appointment book, determining their own hours that they wanted to work. And if they looked at the appointment book and saw that they perhaps didn't have enough grooms for the day and they didn't feel like their time was well spent at the facility, they could also scratch their name off of the appointment book and transfer their grooms to other groomers if they so chose. Here we have individual payment, which is one factor that the division was relying upon in finding an employment relationship. But we would argue here, these are individuals that are licensed by the state of Colorado Department of Agriculture and are required to perform the services individually. They can hire assistants, they can hire others, so long as they're licensed, but because it requires performance by a licensed individual, we would argue that this factor should not be given enormous weight in this overall totality of the circumstances analysis. Another factor that is not mentioned in the statute 870.115, but that this court may also consider in determining employee classification issues, is whether or not the worker at issue set their own prices for their services. We would argue that this factor is most compelling. For an individual or a business to be able to set the price that they charge for their service and to be able to have the discretion to set that price in their own judgment based upon their own situation or their own circumstances or their own evaluation of the particular service, we believe is a very compelling reason that these workers are in fact engaged in an independent trade. The substantial evidence in the record was that the workers did set differing prices based upon breed of dogs that came in, temperament of dogs, size, if certain customers wanted an express service or not. There was evidence and testimony taken that support that the individual groomers were able to set their prices on their own, which we believe is very compelling.
And the company had no input into those prices?
No. What the company had was they provided the groomers just sort of a price list, just to say this is generally what people charge for grooming services, but the company and the testimony at the hearing was that the company does not approve or provide any motivation or anything with respect to the prices. The groomers were free to set those prices all on their own.
So, I'm sorry, counsel, but the panel decision says the price, this is for the groomers at least, the prices charged customers must be approved by the employer. You're saying there's no evidence to support that statement?
Correct. We're saying that the panel erred in relying on that evidence because the record does not, we do not believe the record supports that finding. As I mentioned, there was evidence that there was a price list that was available at the groom shop, but there was also significant testimony by groomers as well as Duntough representatives that there was no requirement of approval of prices. We also have in the evidence, we have reports, daily reports showing what the individual groomers charged each day for particular breeds, and they showed the differing prices that were charged. And as there's nobody from Duntough at the facility on a day-to-day basis doing any sort of supervision or doing any sort of approval process, Duntough doesn't see those reports until they're submitted for allocation purposes and compensation.
Okay, thank you.
As I mentioned, we believe that the substantial evidence in the record, if correctly applied, shows that there was no direction and control of the groomers at issue here. We have a second subclass of workers here, which is bathers. And we would argue that those bathers were hired by the groomers directly. Here we have the panel and the division that relied upon the groomers being in a agency employment relationship, and therefore if they retained bathers to assist them, then they were likewise employees of Duntough. But here all of the evidence in the record supports that Duntough made no hiring or firing decisions, made no decisions with respect to compensation whatsoever. All of that was decided by the groomer. And as we believe the groomers are appropriately deemed independent contractors, those bathers as well are independent contractors. The last issue for this court's review that I wanted to point out was whether or not the statute relied upon by the division to issue its liability determinations here allows the division to assess class-wide tax liability on businesses based upon just one representative worker. And here we have two representative workers. We have a representative for the groomer class and a representative for the bather class, neither of which testified at the hearing. We heard testimony from other groomers and we heard testimony from the Duntough representatives. But the division and the panel essentially affirmed the division's finding that there was a tax liability, there should be a tax liability assessment for entire classes of workers based upon the one representative worker's circumstance. And we would argue that the statute itself does not provide for that broad of a tax assessment. It needs to be an individual assessment. The employment relationship is fundamentally one, a question of fact, and it's fundamentally one of the individual circumstances between the worker and the company. And to assess class-wide tax liability, we argue, is beyond the authority granted to the division in the statute.
Did you raise that issue before the hearing officer?
I raised it before the panel, and I raised it before the hearing officer in our briefs.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We would ask that this court reverse the decisions of the panel.
But you're not, it would not be opposed to a remand?
No.
Thank you. You can run the lectern down a little bit if you wish.
I think that will work. Good afternoon, my name is Krista Mayer, and my attorney registration number is 42140. I'm from the Attorney General's Office on behalf of the Industrial Claim Appeals Office. The Industrial Claim Appeals Panel concluded that the groomers and bathers who work at Care Bears Pet Grooming were employees of Care Bears. The panel's orders should be affirmed for three reasons. First, the panel considered a number of factors and determined that they showed that Care Bears exercised control and direction over the pet groomers and bathers. Second, the panel also considered a number of factors and determined that the groomers and bathers were not customarily engaged in independent business. And third, Care Bears presented no evidence to show that any groomers or bathers were not similarly situated to the representatives for those group. And in fact, Care Bears provided the information that identified certain employees as groomers and others as bathers. Just quickly, I want to note that I noticed that Care Bears did not make an present an argument today about the its discovery argument that was in the briefs. I won't focus on that. If this court, if this division has questions for me, I'd be happy to answer those. Although the panel did not have the benefit of the Soft Rock of the Supreme Court's holding in Soft Rock at the time that it made its determinations in this case, it analyzed the dynamic of the working relationship between the Care Bears and the pet groomers and bathers in a way that was consistent with Soft Rock. Under Section 870.115.1b, the burden was on Care Bears to prove both that the groomers and bathers were, number one, free of Care Bears' direction and control, and number two, customarily engaged in an independent business or trade. Care Bears did not meet either prong of that statutory test. The panel's orders show that it considered numerous factors in reaching its decision because those orders articulate findings on specific factors found in the statute and in cases such as Longview Systems versus ICAO. The panel was particularly persuaded by certain factors which weighed heavily in favor of employer-employee relationship. In particular, the fact that Care Bear's business operations were combined with the business operations of the groomers and bathers. That is, the grooming business operates out of one central business location where Care Bears provides unified appointment, telephone, and payment systems, tools and equipment for the bathers and groomers to use, a unified approach to resolving customer complaints, and it also noted that the customer pays Care Bears directly. Care Bears provided benefits to the groomers and bathers, such as advertising and business cards for the groomers to use, as well as discount programs to bring in customers at no cost to the groomers and bathers. Care Bears paid the groomers and bathers in their individual names. It set the commission rate at which the groomers were paid, and it also employed some groomers as managers and trusted them with opening and closing duties, as well as reconciling the groomers' reports with the money received each day.
If then this is going to jump ahead to your third issue, so feel free to defer your answer. But if some of the groomers have quasi-managerial responsibilities and others don't, doesn't that weigh against a sort of a class-wide determination that was made here that all the groomers are employees?
No, it doesn't weigh against a class-wide determination because the factors even for the groomers who were not assigned managerial duties, the factors still weighed heavily in favor of employment for them. And the panel considered the fact that managers were that there were certain groomers who were given managerial duties to indicate an employment relationship among all of the groomers. And I want to I can go through the factors in the statute. I think I highlighted some of the key factors that the panel considered. But I'd also like to address a couple of the factors addressed by Care Bears. The opposing counsel noted that the concern about the factor of whether these groomers were working for other companies or were operating their own independent business and providing services to others. Now, SoftDrop did clearly tell us that a decision cannot be based solely on whether a worker is providing services to others or not. However, SoftDrop did not instruct us not to consider that factor. The panel here noted that, in its order, noted that that it would need to see that the groomers were engaged in a separate business venture. And while admittedly that language is a little bit vague, I think that it does not only refer to whether a person is providing a worker is providing services to another, but also encompasses the entire work in an independent trade or business. So in addition to considering whether these groomers and bathers were working for others, they also looked at did they have a business license? Did they have their own separate business cards? Did they have their own separate business telephone number? Did they have anything indicating that they were operating a separate independent trade or business? And the panel concluded that there were no indicators of any independent trade or business.
But Ms. Ware, let me focus on that statement that your opposing counsel focused on, which you alluded to. The panel says the putative employer must show that the worker is engaged in a separate business venture, mm-hmm. but it goes on to say other than provision of services for the putative employer. Doesn't that suggest it's relying on the single dispositive factor that we were told not to rely on exclusively in the Supreme Court SoftDrop decision?
No, I don't think so. I think that that we need to look at the entire order and the factors considered throughout the order. And I think that that when you look at the order, the analysis of other factors that pertain to whether a worker is operating a separate trade or business are articulated throughout that order.
Well, let me ask you this. Later on in the same paragraph, the panel says the employer suggests that the groomer's decision not to seek other clients was due to their own decision because the employer does not prohibit the groomer from doing so. And then the panel says the statute does not make this factor one of any consequence. Isn't that just wrong? Under the soft law decision of the Supreme Court, that is a relevant factor, that it could be of some consequence, whether or not the putative employer prohibited the worker from seeking other employment.
I think you're right, Judge. I think that Soft Rock instructed courts and the panel and the hearing officer to look at all factors relevant to a determination of the dynamic between the worker and the putative employer. However, I think that the substance of the orders is consistent with the instructions in Soft Rock.
What's your position on remanding for specific consideration by the panel of the Supreme Court's decision in Soft Rock?
Well, Your Honor, my position is that we don't think that this case needs to be remanded. We do think that the panel's orders were consistent with the Soft Rock decision. However, we agree that if this division in an abundance of caution wishes to remand it, then that would be the proper course. How, that said, we believe that based on these facts, the outcome would be the same. One point that I'd like to make about termination at will. The contract, the independent contractor contract, under which Care Bears and its employees signed, did have a termination at will paragraph at 4.1. And that paragraph specifically stated that that Care Bears would have sole discretion to terminate any of the employees at will, with or without cause. It did also provide the employees with the ability to terminate the employment relationship with 7 days' notice. And that is in the Bader's record at Exhibit HH. In responding to Care Bear's argument regarding classes of workers, the employees that were considered here as bathers and groomers, they were identified by Care Bears as bathers and groomers for Care Bears. And they were, the orders specifically referred to the representative groomers and bathers and all those similarly situated.
Whose burden is it to show that the representative claimants are substantially similar to everybody else in that job classification?
Well, Your Honor, under the statute, all of Care Bear's workers are presumed to be employees. And it's the employer's burden to show that certain workers are independent contractors under the statute.
But the division made a strategic decision to proceed as if this was a representative or a class action rather than having each individual employee come in. So whose burden is it, who using the class action terminology, I mean, whose burden is it on substantial similarity? Because it would seem it ought to be the person who proposes to do a class action approach.
Well, and Your Honor, it would be on the employer for the reasons I stated, but also because the employer is the one who provides the information to the division about which workers are performing which types of services and under what conditions they're performing those services. I'll be honest, I'm not sure exactly what happened in this situation, but generally the employer designates certain representatives. So, but again, I can't be sure what happened in this case. I think it's really just a matter of the employer coming in and saying, well, these, you know, A, B, and C should not be considered employees because they have different circumstances and they're not working under the same conditions as the other groomers that you've accepted questionnaires from and who testified. Before I conclude my argument, I want to make sure that I've answered all of the questions. Okay. If there are no further questions, then we would ask that this court affirm the panel's orders.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. We will issue a written opinion in due course.